Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jacqueline Stewart Hawkins, Executive Vice President and Head of Multicultural Communications at Edelman. This week, we will be discussing findings from our latest 2022 Edelman Trust Barometer Special Report, Business and Racial Justice in America. To discuss the report, I am joined by Janet Murguia, President and CEO of Unidos US, the largest Hispanic civil rights and advocacy organization in the US. Janet is an iconic civil rights activist who has spent her career in public service fighting for the Latino community. We are so excited to have her on. I'm especially honored because I started my career working for Janet back when Unidos US was the National Council of La Raza. This is a full circle moment for me, and I am so excited to have this conversation. Janet, welcome to Trustmakers. Let's get started.
Appreciate the chance to be with you. Thank you for the invitation.
Thanks for coming on. You know, we really view your role in the community as not only advancing civil rights and racial justice for the Latino community, but just being a beacon overall. So that's why we think it's important for your perspective here. Our new Trust Barometer Special Report, Business and Racial Justice in America, shows that awareness to racism is on the rise in the US. People from Latino, Black, and API communities are increasingly fearing racism at 67% of our respondents, right? That's an overwhelming sort of majority. What do you make of the juxtaposition of greater general awareness, yet greater fear among people from multicultural communities?
Yeah, it's an interesting paradox, but sadly that juxtaposition tracks with the fact that there has been an increase in incidents of violence and bigotry that have raised the awareness of continued systemic racism for everyone across the country. So people are more aware of it, but for the tragic reasons and the awful incidents that have involved police shootings of unarmed people like George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Ahmaud Arbery, and the shootings that have targeted groups just because of their ethnicity. We've seen that increase in the rise of Asian hate and campaigns that have really had to be created to counter that. And of course, we've seen it in the Latino community as well. So it's been ironic that these incidents have created more awareness, but yet more fear in communities of color. But that's exactly what's playing out and why we need to collectively as a country and across various sectors focus on how we can all address that increase in sensibility of racism for communities of color and take steps to address it.
I love that you brought up systemic racism in, you know, your last comments. I want to talk about the importance for discussing it this way, right? Discussing systemic racism. Why is it important to talk about that term specifically?
You know, Jacqueline, it's important because, you know, we've seen the African-American community increasingly you know, their journey has been not fully understood. And, you know, these incidents have really reflected underlying issues in our systems. We're seeing it firsthand in the criminal justice system and our policing system, but it's true across various sectors in industry, like access to banking and capital and the failure to get access to housing and home ownership. We're seeing it, you know, particularly highlighted in access to healthcare as a result of the pandemic. And what's also being uncovered in all of this is that it's not just African-Americans, but it's other communities like the Latino community that have been impacted by those layers. And they've been embedded in these systems over time, and some can point clearly to when we started as a country or even before. And so this has been a call to action for all of us. The tragedies that have emerged have allowed us to not only look at those incidents, but to look back at our history and how we've evolved and what we have failed to acknowledge. I mean, whether it's being a woman, whether it's being people of color, whether it's the Native American community, all of these communities have had different systemic barriers in these different sectors placed. And we're only now being able to kind of rally everyone to look in a harsh truth at what our history has been and the work we still need to do to address those barriers across various sectors and industries.
It's critically important what you just did, right? So you started off the conversation talking about violence and hate crimes and, you know, sort of the murders that have happened in these communities. And you then brought up banking, right? And folks are reticent to sort of make the connection when talking about racism in order to really discuss what it means and its impact on communities. But it really starts to have the same thread, right?
Absolutely. Look, I think, you know, we've all seen because of the incidents on television and media reports where the criminal justice system and policing system have these gaps that have to be addressed. And George Floyd really was a catalyzing moment, that tragedy. But again, it's allowed us to also focus on other areas where these gaps exist. And the way to, I think, draw some action steps to address them are some of the issues that were highlighted in your latest report. And that is needing to make sure that we protect the right to vote for everyone. The barriers in access to our very basic democracy are in jeopardy right now. We're seeing actions taken that are allowing us to backslide as a country when it comes to our underpinning of our democracy and having the right to vote. The state-led initiatives that have been passing that are now law are making it harder for all communities of color to have access to the ballot box. We need to change that. We need a federal standard, a national standard. We need to pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Protection Act and make sure that we're protecting those rights for everyone and that this isn't a sort of a patchwork reform that's left up to certain states. We also need to make sure that, again, we're addressing this issue of violence against communities of color. That's really important. And so there are laws right now being contemplated that can help address those. But at the local level, we need more activism by those who are interested in seeing those gaps addressed and making sure whether you're a part of the Unidos US network or the NAACP chapter membership or NUL urbanly or the AAPI community that we're raising these issues at the national level, but at the local level. And then I would just say in response to the pandemic, even before the pandemic, we had gaps and disparities in our healthcare system that weren't allowing full access to healthcare and coverage to all of our communities of color. Those are systemic barriers. We need to extend the Affordable Care Act. We need to make sure that Medicaid extension coverages are being supported at the state level so that our children are not denied access to care. So there's still a lot of work to be done, and we're leading that effort across these different issues on behalf of the Latino community and others at Unidos US. But tragically, we've seen that we've still got a long way to go when it comes to addressing systemic racism and those underlying barriers to access to these types of basic and essential, basically areas of interest for our communities.
Yeah, we've seen that institutions are failing to step up when it comes to these issues, right? When it comes to racism, what role do institutions play in addressing systemic racism in this country? You mentioned voting, for example. What role does business, does media have to play in these issues?
Well, I think increasingly, and again, your report underscores some of our own findings in this, especially as it relates to our younger generation and young talent that's being employed by corporate America today, whether they're in the private sector or the nonprofit sector. But our younger people are demanding that companies act with a core set of values. And there is a strong sense of social justice that they're centered on. Now, I know companies have to examine the notion that they're there in service to everyone and not everyone is aligned in a certain space. But companies are going to be asked increasingly, do you have a core set of tenets or values? And do they include a sensibility around social justice? And I think companies are going to be on the hook to really articulate their principles and values, because it's going to be important not just for external matters and policy positions that they take, but for them to be accountable to their own workforce and to also understand that it's not only the right thing to do, but it's the smart thing to do in terms of keeping up with the expectations around their workforce and what's going to be demanded perhaps increasingly with their shareholders in terms of some of those expectations around values.
You're exactly right. When people talk about young people, they love to talk about it as future looking, right? Future proofing, as part of future proofing their workplaces or organizations. But the truth is it's right now, right? Because folks in that demographic make up half of the workforce today. So the stakes are higher, right? Our study showed that 7 in 10 young employees choose to either stay, pick a job or leave a job over their employer's response to racism. What role have you seen young people play in your own work at Unidos US? I know it's where I started when I was quote unquote young. And how are they accelerating efforts to combat systemic racism?
It's a great question. And again, just to level set here a little bit, you know, we just have to recognize that our country is far more diverse than ever before. As a country, we are very much, on the cusp of having a majority of Americans being either Black, Latino, Asian American, or a combination thereof. You know, we know that 1 in 5 Americans are now Latino, but for those under the age of 18, it's 1 out of 4, and that 93% of those are US citizens. 1/3 of new workers into our economy will be Latino by the end of the decade. So the Latino community is a core part of the American future, but a lot of folks, including those in corporate America, still don't understand that means their future employees, customers, vendors, and other partners will increasingly be Latino. And our research has shown that diverse companies do better when it comes to the bottom line. So the benefit of diverse input at the very senior level is imperative, but it also across the board drives innovation and not to mention profit. So we're seeing that diversity is an asset. And as you mentioned, we're seeing it increasingly represented in our younger talent that's coming into play. In our own nonprofit sector, we are seeing that. And it's driving for us to have reflective conversations, to step back and think about how do we need to reset in terms of our being representative of fully of the Latino community The race equity issue is something that came up front and center. You know, we've had to recognize that when it comes to racism, you know, our community is not immune to it. And we have to talk about anti-Blackness in the Latino community. And we've had to set up those conversations within our organization and hear about the best ways that we think we can counter that. And it has allowed us to basically launch a race equity initiative so that we can better inform ourselves as an organization, but also better inform our community about those potential racist tendencies and how we can be best positioned to address them. And a lot of it is more about being honest and creating spaces for us to have candid conversations. You know, some in our community and certainly externally don't understand that for us, you know, one out of four Latinos is Afro-Latino. And we've got to really understand that not only is the country demographically changing, but we're changing as a Latino community, and understand what that means in terms of how we position ourselves on these issues from a policy perspective and programmatically.
I'm one of those one in four. So I'm extremely proud to hear that, excited to hear that, and love the work you're doing in that space. How do you view intersectionality playing into all of this, right? When we're talking about the diversity of the Latino community, this is a community that I feel like could be the tide to start lifting all boats, because there's a little bit of everything in the Latino community, right?
You're absolutely right. And it's one of the reasons why, in part, we chose to change our name after our 50th milestone anniversary as an organization. As you know, we used to be the National Council of La Raza, NCLR. One, though, what we saw in our data was that not everyone identified with La Raza as a Latino or Chicano. A lot of that came out of early movements, and especially young people and others saw that phrase as a sort of a small subset of the Latino community, when we clearly have had the focus of all the Latino community and others that we've been trying to help and really be at the heart of our mission in terms of the work that we do with our network of about 300 community-based organizations that are serving the community across the country in various areas, whether it's housing and home ownership and access to economic empowerment, or whether it's health and health programs that help our community understand the steps they can take to better their wellness and care and support health policies that are going to be doing that and expanding coverage, or whether it's in workforce development and access to technology, whether it's in immigration and civil rights. All of that is at the heart of our work, and we do it through this network of community-based organizations. But if folks didn't see themselves at the heart of our mission because our name didn't appear to be inclusive, we needed to rectify that. So right around our 50th anniversary, we changed our name to Unidos US, which means coming together, unity, and being united. And for us, it's a rallying cry for our community to come together and advocate for those collective issues that can help everyone, but also it's an invitation for others to join us. So for us, it really meant the intersectionality of other communities, but it also meant that you can't work on one issue like housing without also addressing related issues like education, like healthcare, because that family or that individual really needs a strong foundation. And it's the intersectionality of those issues that really are going to create that stronger foundation for us to lift up and advance our community in across the country.
The issues run the gamut, right? As you just mentioned, you named a number of them. Over the years, you have worked with so many leaders in the business space to address these issues, especially CEOs. We found that 82% of our respondents expect CEOs to take action when it comes to racism. Are there CEOs that you work with that you see is doing significant work in this area? And you don't have to name them if you don't like to. But, you know, if you could give us some examples and some lessons learned.
I will just say that we started in 1982, a corporate board of advisors, because we knew even then that it would be important to build partnerships with corporate America and better understanding of work that they can do to create access and support the inclusion of our community, not only in their company, but in the work that they do and their voice in policy or in investments of programs. So in 1982, we started, and today we still have a corporate board of advisors that represents top Fortune 100 companies that have committed to understanding and learning more about the Latino community and taking steps to be inclusive. We're not the only organization out there engaging companies. I'm really proud of the work ASED has done, the Hispanic Association for Corporate Responsibility, and Sid Wilson has led. Also, Esther Aguilera with the Latino Corporate Diversity Advisory Board, because we understand we have to work across organizations to increase engagement by corporate America. I know that there are a number of initiatives that have targeted folks to engage, but we've actually had a lot of good outcomes that we can point to that still highlight the need for companies to do more, but show progress in certain areas. And I think, you know, for me, Bank of America and Brian Moynihan, Comcast and the Roberts family have been really important for us to make sure that we're engaging at the highest levels and building those relationships, because that can translate into actions down. And that commitment to racial equity and to diversity and inclusion has to start at the very top. And when you can point to those partnerships, starting with me being able to have an engagement with the CEO to CEO, it shows in ways that I think we can point to as tangible outcomes across various initiatives.
Now, you know, organizations like Unidos US have been doing this work before 2020. But we know that since 2020, there has been a rush for these types of partnerships, exactly the ones that you were just talking about, right? Corporations are looking to really bolster their image, and nonprofits are looking for partners and able to advance this important work. We know that so many organizations are judicious when they're thinking about, you know, who to partner with. What is it that you look for in a corporate partner to bring on board?
Well, I think for us, it's really a true value proposition that they want to engage and learn. And really at the heart of that value proposition is trust. They're willing to be a trusted partner and be transparent about where their gaps are and help us help them. But then they can educate us. Maybe there are business propositions that we need to be educated about, business elements that we can help them with, because there may be some legitimate business aspect that we don't understand. But the key to a strong partnership is a strong value proposition where we can identify the key elements of that proposition. But ultimately, it's got to be trust and accountability and transparency. And if there's not accountability and transparency, you really can't find ways to, I think, show or demonstrate progress. But trust is at the center of it, knowing that they can come to us and understand that they may not be perfect, but they're interested in learning and wanting to make steps to address those gaps around whether it's inequities and systemic inequities, or around diversity and inclusion?
One of the areas where I think companies can start to show more commitment to diversity and inclusion is on their boards. I feel like that's an area that you've been very vocal about. You know, can you speak to that lack of representation that we see at that level and what the implications are of that lack of diversity?
Yeah, again, this is where that commitment to diversity and inclusion, the commitment to equity starts at the very top. And so that means the C-suite, the mid-level officers of these companies and executives must reflect that diversity. But if the board itself is not diverse, it's really hard to really get the perspective of what your of the consumers or the workforce that you want to represent. We already talked about how that all has changed demographically in the US. You want to be informed by those individuals who have had that experience and understand it. Of course, they bring other talent and other assets, but it needs to be guided in real ways by folks who have had that experience and can inform the company of those needs and gaps as they've been seen and help them address them. And if that commitment is not there at the very top, it's not going to be completely able to translate into an outcome that I think will benefit the company, not just from doing what's right, but the smart thing to do, because we have seen the more diverse boards in these companies, the better their bottom line. So this is something that I think can be a win-win, and it's something we've advocated. Most recently, we've shown that through this Proyecto 20%, an initiative we launched to help create a more diverse federal government, and certainly in an administration that can reflect the diversity of the country. We have a group of organizations that have come together to support Proyecto 20% and really have a goal of seeing representation, not just in the cabinet, but in the sub-cabinet of the government and also in other appointments that are made. I think we're seeing some success in that role, but we've had to bring credible, qualified candidates and have established a database. Well, I think increasingly we can partner with other groups, whether it's ASED or others, to make sure we're bringing strong candidates to corporate America. And I don't think that corporations can say they cannot find the talent that they need. We're bringing it to them. We can bring them our database, but that is out there. But they need to insist that these hires actually be part of searches that are inclusive so that those choices are clear for them. And I think more of those best practices are what are going to further the outcomes that I think can be beneficial and reflect that inclusion and diversity.
It's also the environment, right? What is the environment that folks are walking into when they're stepping into these leadership positions? What do you think employers could be doing better to sort of create a more inclusive environment for these leaders?
Well, I do think that we're seeing, obviously, the need for different employee resource groups to have a sense that they belong. But ultimately, it's making sure that that diversity and inclusion is not sort of siloed off in a separate part of the company. It's got to be centered. That person needs to be reporting directly to the CEO, and it needs to be corporate-wide commitment. Those types of practices are what's going to allow for those in the workforce to feel like they're seen. But if they don't see people who look like them represented at the highest levels of that company, it's really demoralizing increasingly for these younger workers. They need to feel represented through their voice, through their values, but it does matter who they see in these roles at the very top, whether it's on the board, in the CEO space, or certainly in the senior leadership, because that makes a statement about the kind of commitment that that company is making and how they see the importance of diversity and inclusion.
That's right. Bottom line, they just have to do it, right? They have to do it.
Just do it. And there's so many opportunities now to tap into talent at every level. And they're partners. You know, Unidos US stands ready and willing, but we're not the only organization. Obviously, we have a long track record of partnering with various companies and can be, I think, a source of not only information, but opportunity to for these companies to learn and understand where they can make investments and changes so that they can be fully inclusive and reflective of the, again, the changes that we're seeing play out in the country today. And that's those are smart business decisions. So partnering with organizations, making sure that their ranks at the highest level are diverse and their workforce is seeing that and see themselves in that leadership in any of these roles is, I think, going to be increasingly even more critically important.
Well, I think you've given our listeners plenty of homework to do, and we hope that they get on it because there's a lot of impact to drive. Janet, thank you so much for coming on the show and for sharing your insights and expertise. And to our listeners, thank you for listening to The Trustmakers.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.